The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Another episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast, and we will be welcoming Dan Katz, a.k.a. Big Cat, from Barstool Sports on the show today. And we've gotten some feedback from some of the listeners, and they've been Penn State alums, Notre Dame alums. Jim Nyes, at Big Jim Sports, said, "My wife, who's a Michigan fan, and I, who's a Notre Dame fan, absolutely love the show. We especially loved the episode with the whole family. Now all we want to do is come over to Jack and Jackie's for spaghetti. Keep up the great work."
Welcome at any time.
There you go. You might have people beating down your door for that. So now with the recruiting classes behind us, and I know people make a lot of stars and recruiting classes and everything, and I go back and I think back to my quarterback who's still in the NFL, Josh Johnson, who had zero scholarship offers and working on a 10-year NFL career. And I went back and looked at some of the other guys that have Willie Henry was the least touted prospect of the 2012 recruiting class, now with the Ravens. Saw Doug Baldwin, the lowest rated prospect in the 2007 Stanford class with a 2-star rating. So I was kind of wondering if you can think back to some of the players that you recruited your time at Western Kentucky or coached some of your other guys who haven't been all that highly touted but turned out to be pretty decent contributors. Can you think of anybody?
Most every class that you recruit, there's that one player in that class that you just saw something in him. It was just something you saw. He wasn't a two-star, or it wasn't a five-star or four-star, but something you saw in him. I was talking to Greg Madison. He was talking about going to a wrestling match. And you have a kid, and you're kind of wondering, and all at once you watch him wrestle, and you see that fire in his eye. You see something in that match. We want him on our team, and then he goes on to do great things. But the best one that I can remember, or quick one I remember quick, is John Offerdahl at Western Michigan. He was out of Wisconsin. Greg Madison was recruiting him, and we had a big tackle there that was being recruited by everyone. Michigan, Wisconsin, he was being recruited by everyone, and he showed us that he might have an interest in Western Michigan. So Greg went over to talk with him, and the coach said, "We got a kid here, plays football, basketball, and baseball. Skinny kid, he's 180 pounds, about 6'3", 3.5 student, plays in the band, plays the French horn in the band, and you might want to talk to him." "Well, who's recruiting him?" "Nobody." "Nobody." So he went, and he said, "Well, I'd like to say hello to him." So he said, "He'll be coming out of his class here, and he's got to go to the band practice, but you can say hello to him." So Greg met him, and he had his French horn case and introduced himself. "Greg Madison, Western Michigan University, want to talk to you about maybe coming for a visit." "Well, sorry, sir. The class starts at 1 o'clock, and I've never been late for a class, and I won't be able to talk to you now. I've got to run to band practice." So he went off, and Greg came back. We looked at film. He's blocking punts. He's running people down. He's playing like a guy from a different time zone. I said, "Greg, how about 89? "Well, yeah, I met him. He's band, French horn, had to get to his class, didn't want to be late. I don't think we'd be interested." I said, "What do you mean? This guy shows discipline. This guy shows punctuality. This guy shows that band practice is important to him. Let's bring him over for a visit." We did. Came over with his father. Just a shy guy, but just you could just see in his eyes. Started every single game at Western Michigan. In his sophomore and junior year, he was a third-team All-American from Western Michigan. Second-round draft choice for the Miami Dolphins. Think he plays in 7 Pro Bowls. Son Jameson is here at the University of Michigan now, and Jim competed against him when he was with the Dolphins and Jim was with the Bears. They had a chance to play on the same field, which was a fantastic thing for Jackie and myself. But there are those players in every class. I promise you, as I speak to you, there will be someone in this class, this University of Michigan 2018 class, that we'll be talking about a year, two, three, four from now.
And John Offerdahl has produced a great son in Jameson, engineering major, world-class work ethic and attitude. applying for an internship with Ford. You know, just got a lot of things going for him, and we're thrilled to have him on the squad. Coach, any names ring a bell with you in the recruiting trail and unheralded guys that turned out pretty good?
Well, heralded and unheralded, and as Dad said, you see something in each individual, and I got a list of 22 of them that we recruited this year, starting with the quarterback, Joe Milton from Orlando, Florida, relative of Anquan Boldin, their cousins. Joe's a big, strong, 6'5", 230-pound quarterback with a great arm, playmaker, very, very athletic. The one thing about him is he loves football and highly, highly competitive. And he's here as a mid-year right now and doing a heck of a job. Miles Sims is another youngster who came as a mid-year from Atlanta, Georgia. Talk about long corners. You like long corners, 6'2", 6'3", GPA of 3.5, like John Offerdahl. Taylor Upshaw, son of Reagan Upshaw, jumped off the tape as soon as we started watching. Defensive lineman, very athletic, very long, 3.6 grade point average, with about a 10.50 SAT. Hassan Haskins, running back. Talk about the throwbacks. A basketball player. He's a football player. He was second in the Gatorade Player of the Year. He was first or second. No, he might have been first in Missouri. Ronnie Bell. One was first, one was second. But, big 6'1" type of running back, 230 pounds. Christian Turner, another 3.39 grade point average. Excellent running back from the state of Georgia. Cam McGrone, maybe the highest rated player in the class. And talk about a great family. Talk about just every single person, no drama whatsoever, came to Michigan, visited Michigan, wanted to come to Michigan, jumps out at the tape, going to be an outstanding linebacker. I think he'll be somebody that'll be right in the mix early. Aiden Hutchinson, defensive lineman, right here from the state of Michigan. His father played football here at Michigan, 3.6 grade point average. And, again, like Taylor Upshaw, like Julius Welskoff, right out of the 6'5", 6'6", growing into their bodies, 280 pounds already. I mean, I think he's going to be something special. Jalen Mayfield, what do you see in him? Athletic tackle, also from the state of Michigan, played in the Army All-American game, did a heck of a job. Basketball player himself, very athletic. Mustafa Muhammad jumps off of the tape. Freakish ability to jump, to run, to catch, and one of the top-rated tight ends, I think second in the country. The Green brothers. I want to tell the story of Gamon Green and German Green, Dad. Their uncle Anthony played for you at Western Kentucky.
Anthony Green was one of the great athletes that we coached at Western Kentucky. A receiver, tremendous athlete, kickoff, punt return guy. Played with the Dallas Cowboys for a year. Played with the 49ers for a while. Was an undrafted free agent into the pros, and these are his nephews. Remind me a lot of him physically when you look at him, when you see him.
Tall, long,
tall, rangy,
athletic,
long-legged, long-armed athletes that run track. Another multi, combination that you recruited there. But and Anthony had a personality. Great story about him. One time we're playing against Southeast Missouri at the time. It's Missouri State now. We set up this kickoff return to the right. And the ball came down the field, and Anthony got it on about the 3-yard line and started to the right. And all at once, he stopped about 3 steps into it, stopped cold, and then he reversed the field reversed the field to the left and outrun the entire team to the goal line for a kickoff return. And I said, Anthony, that's the greatest run that I've ever seen, but it was a right return. What made you reverse your field and go to the left? He said, Coach, you won't believe it, but when I started to the right, everybody ran over there. Their guys ran over there, and I peeked back. There wasn't a soul down the left sideline. So I just decided that that's where I was want to go. Great coaching, Anthony, put you in that position.
And the Green brothers Both are those type of athletes. They're long. I think one can play. We'll see. It'd be great if one plays corner and one plays safety. It's going to give us a lot of help in the secondary, and feel great about them. Another guy, Luke Schoonmaker, who German Green tore an ACL his junior year and rehabbed from that, came back, played his entire senior year, had an interception in one of the All-Star games. Schoony, Luke Schoonmaker, was a quarterback his freshman, sophomore year, and then junior year got into they started playing him some at tight end, and his senior year they played him a lot at tight end, but really fast, and another 6'6", 4'6", type of guy that can really run and catch and develop in his blocking. I think he's watched him play basketball, football, and a basketball player. You look at him on the basketball court, I mean, phenomenal everything, physique and athleticism. So
similar to Zach Gentry, you think, Coach?
Yeah, Zach was a quarterback in high school as well. I think he'll be very similar. A little, he's more developed physically than Zach was when Zach was coming out of high school. Couple of 2 inches shorter, but 6'6" is plenty tall to play tight end. So very excited about him. Ryan Hayes was actually a tight end in high school. And he's probably 6'7". Talk about long, athletic guys that you like to move into the offensive line. I think he will project very well to be an offensive tackle as Mother Nature takes over and he gets into the strength program here with Coach Herbert. I think he's got a lot of upside to be a very athletic, like a Joe Staley, like many guys that have started out as a tight end and moved into the offensive line to play tackle. I think he'll be fantastic. Sammy Faustin, another athletic safety type of athlete that we need, highly rated player, et cetera. But, we'll get into that story some other time. Becoming a citizen in the United States and he'll be going to college at Michigan and it'll help us a lot in the secondary. One of my favorite guys, Ben Van Summeren, who's from Bay City, Michigan, a guy who trained. What do you like about him? What do you like about him? I like that he has a 3.6 grade point average. I like that he gets up every day and gets his workout in at 5:30 a.m. at the YMCA, and then he goes to school, and then after school, about 5:30 at night, he gets another workout in at the YMCA.
And we'll get to this.
And a heck of a baseball player. Want to talk about baseball? Want to talk about a guy who hits home runs? Very, very, very Ben Mason-like. Very much the same. What do you love Ben Mason as a football player? His mindset, his toughness. Ben Van Summeren is wired the same way. Talked about Julius Welskopf a little bit from Germany. We first met him when we were over in Europe, and looks like could be Aiden Hutchinson's brother, Reagan Taylor Upshaw's relative. I mean, they're all cut from the same mold, the 6'5", 280, and very athletic. Don't want to forget Vincent Gray, also here from the state of Michigan, cornerback, 6'2", long arms, very athletic, another 3.1 grade point average. Michael Barrett, the 6A State Player of the Year in the state of Georgia, another quarterback in high school. I project him as a guy that we can make a receiver out of, similar to Anquan Boldin when Anquan was a high school quarterback. But we can also put him in the backfield as a running back. We can put him in the backfield as a quarterback. So extremely excited about him. Another guy who's well-trained, comes from a great program, a winning program. Talk about leaders. How do you make leaders on your own team? I've always felt that one of the best ways to do that is recruit guys. Great leadership ability and strong character. And then also Casey Hughes, who's be transferring from Utah. Somebody that gives us versatility as a corner, as a safety, as a nickel. Somebody that can cover and tackle. Great combination. And so, do I see something in each one of those guys? See something in every single one of them? Excited that they're going to be playing here at the University of Michigan. And they're good on the field. They're good in the classroom. It's a class to be very, very excited about.
A couple points.
And I don't think just one. I don't think there'll just be one guy in that class. I think there's going to be multiple.
The two things that jump out at me as you talk about these recruits is, number one, the multi-sport guys. I think we have somewhat lost sight of that over the years because of this concentration, you know, coaches, high school coaches, AAU coaches, and they talk to parents about, well, you got to concentrate on football in the seventh grade or the sixth grade or the fifth grade. I'm a total advocate against that. I think competitive guys and guys want to be multi-sports. They're athletes. They want to play basketball. They want to run track. They want to play baseball. And to see the number of players in this class, it'd be interesting to come up with that. How many of them are multi-sport guys? It seems like there are quite a few of them. And the second thing that I like about this class in recruiting, I'm talking about recruiting against you. You know, if I'm recruiting against you, and I go into the home, I talk about, well, Michigan, well, why would you want to go to Michigan? They have 8 starters on defense that are freshmen or sophomores. They have 7 starters that have started on offense that are freshmen and sophomores, true freshmen, redshirt. Why would you want to go there? You know, that team's pretty well established. And these guys said, the hell with that. They might be there, but they haven't seen me yet. You know, I want to come there, and I want to compete. So those two things, the combination of those two, multi-sport guys and guys that saw the talent we had here and chose to come to the University of Michigan, in my judgment, speaks highly for this class.
I agree, and it really leads me to one of my favorite guys in the entire class is Ronnie Bell, who is a multi-sport guy and excellent at football, excellent at basketball. And a little bit to, you know, the other side of the coin, so to speak, Ronnie Bell is an elite basketball player. Got signed a scholarship to go to Missouri State as a Division I basketball player. And he's a football player who won the Simone Award, which is Player of the Year in Kansas City, which is a big area. I mean, it's the Kansas City metropolitan area. It stretches to Lawrence, all practically to Columbia, a good 60-mile radius around Kansas City. But he was playing AAU basketball. So he's come up 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th grade, 11th grade, being an elite basketball player as well. And what happened to him was going from his junior year to his senior year, he didn't go to any of the shoe camps, the Adidas camp or the Nike camp or the Under Armour camp, because he was playing AAU basketball. And his star rating did not go up. He did not get invited. Didn't go to the elite, the Nike opening, which many of the players go to, and their profile expands, et cetera. So he was doing AAU basketball, and then you know, he looks up and he's September of his senior year, and he's not getting a lot of football scholarship offers, so he signs with Missouri State. And I was on the phone with Jimmy Kane, who's the head basketball coach at Blue Springs South, also my brother-in-law, just talking to him about 2019 football players and 2018 guys. And this was like late November, early December. And I said, who are the best football players in Kansas City? And he mentions Ronnie Bell. And I go, I don't know Ronnie Bell. Mm-hmm. And I go, tell me about him. Well, he's a great basketball player. He's in our league, and he's also the Simone Award winner. Another youngster, a couple of other names that I did know. He was the player of the year ahead of some of those guys. And so I, you know, looked him up. He didn't really have any offers in football, especially from the local schools. And so I put his tape on, and it was really good. The tape was great. He had 86 catches, over 1,000 yards receiving. And there's got to be a problem here. You know, most likely his grades are poor and low, but when I looked him up, they weren't. He had a 3.31 core and had a good good ACT score. So immediately started thinking we must have gotten trouble of some kind. How could a guy like this be this good and not have the 20, 30 offers or the JT 4-star or 5-star rating? Did he commit some kind of crime? You know, was he in trouble? Had he gotten kicked out of school? Come to find out, no. He was, you know, model type of guy and student. And then I talked to Ronnie, and you know, he told me about the multi sport and it just clicked right away. Well, he didn't go to those camps. You know, he didn't go to the Under Armours and the openings and things like that. So you know, incredible, you know, incredibly fortunate and lucky that that we had that recommendation from Jimmy Kane at Blue Springs South, my brother-in-law. We immediately got on Ronnie. He visited and liked it and ended up committing to play football at Michigan. So, and there's other guys here that maybe didn't play, like Jalen Mayfield didn't play basketball his senior year, and that is a whole nother story in itself, where basketball coaches want the players just playing basketball at the high school level, and the football coaches want them just to play football, and you know, they're forced to make a choice. So you got a guy who's a two sport athlete, and you know, the nature of the politics at the particular high school makes it where they can't be multiple sport guys. So you know, he's was a state champion in basketball his junior year. But so just a couple stories that are current. Hope that the listening audience likes hearing the current stories.
Great stories.
Yeah, and what about the parents? You want to say a quick word maybe about the, I mean, because we had so many of them come through and just how great they are. A quick word on that, Coach?
Yeah, you can add to it, JT, but, you know, go through the, you know, every name, every guy that recruited, everybody has a wonderful story, has things in it that about them and their track record that made us want to recruit them to the University of Michigan, and the families, you become so close with them. You know, there's mothers, there's fathers, there's grandparents, there's uncles, there's cousins. It's just it's an amazing dynamic where you as a coach become part of their family, and we become part of their family. They become part of our family, and it's one of the truly great things about college football.
Absolutely. Well, I guess the last thing here of this segment, Valentine's Day coming up. Jack, I think we're coming over tomorrow to it'll be Tuesday evening with Tanner and his wife, Lauren, and Mara and I, and you and Jackie.
Here's my thought. What I remember being elementary school, St. Joseph Elementary School, a Catholic school back in Crestline, Ohio. On Valentine's Day, we used to go out and get Valentine cards for everybody in the class. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd sign your name, and then there was like an hour or two we passed out Valentines. And I was excited about that, you know, going out and getting those Valentines and passing them to my friends. And it's something I remember, not always getting Valentines from all of my classmates. And it still has left an indelible mark on me. I would say this, as you come over tomorrow for dinner, maybe if you could get a Valentine card for me, I would certainly appreciate that.
You got it, Jack. And I know better than to just get one for you. So I'll make sure that Jackie has one, too.
If I can make a suggestion, you might want to get one for Jackie as well.
Matt Hayes on Twitter, at Matty Oso or Matty 050, said, great job with the podcast. A lot of great guests, but in my opinion, best was Jackie Harbaugh. Nice to hear from the foundation of the family. Can tell that she is as great as Jack always describes her. Love the idea to bring the noise every down on defense, like Jackie always says. And I was able to sample some of the German chocolate cake that Jackie made, and that was phenomenal. Coach, do you have a favorite baked good of Jackie's? She's been baking up a storm with some of the weather, keeping us indoors. You like them all?
Is spaghetti and meatballs, is that baked good?
It can be baked.
I love it.
Okay. All right.
For the second or third time you get it, it probably is baked.
Exactly. Well, that's good. We look forward to the Valentine's Day plans with you and Jackie. We've got a new advertiser to the show, Hims. You can go to their website, forhims.com, forhims.com. And they're addressing a problem. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. I don't know if any of it. Well, Jack's gesturing that perhaps he's lost some of his hair. I know I've got a mean receding hairline. Oh, Jack wants some information. Okay, well, you can go to 4hims.com, and they think that it's easier to keep the hair that you have than to try and regrow hair. So I know it's a little bit too late for you, Jack, but definitely want people to have a resource, and 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, overall wellness for men, and these are medical-grade solutions from real licensed doctors, and they are offering well-known generic equivalents to name brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. So order now. Listeners get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 today right now while supplies last. You can see the website for full details. And this would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. So go to forhims.com/attack, ATTACK, like attack each day, our podcast. And that's forhims.com, forhims.com/attack. You can go there. You can get this great, outstanding deal, this discount, this ability to keep your hair. You can look into some of their skincare and overall wellness products. It's an outstanding line of products. It's a clean website. It's great, Jack. All I can do is advocate for it. I look forward to trying some of the gummies and everything like that, and maybe keeping some of my hair. I know I've got more than you do, and it's not a competition, but I'm looking forward to it. Again, that's forhims.com. And when we come back, we will have Big Cat from Barstool Sports on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
Hey, it's Rob Riggle.
And Sarah Tiana.
And you are listening to Riggle's Pick.
Yeah, and a ham horn. And we have a new podcast available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
Every Thursday, we're going to sit around and we're going to talk about the things that really excite us, like life, comedy, sports, a lot of sports.
Ourselves.
A lot of Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope you join us. Hey, it's Rob Riggle.
And Sarah Tiana.
And you are listening to Riggle's Pick.
Yeah, and a ham horn. And we have a new podcast available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
Every Thursday, we're going to sit around and we're going to talk about the things that really excite us, like life, comedy, sports, a lot of sports.
Ourselves.
A lot of Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope you join us.
Now back to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
On Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here with Dan Katz, one of very few guests to be on twice with us. So, Dan, welcome back.
Big Cat.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Coach, how we doing?
Doing good, Big Cat. How you been?
I'm good, but I have to ask, what are we supposed to do without football?
Well, we can talk about the Super Bowl. What'd you think?
I mean, it was a hell of a game. I honestly think I had a take leading up to the Super Bowl that for once my take was correct, that Doug Peterson, the way he was coaching up Nick Foles and the way he had that team ready was outstanding. And I thought that's exactly what we saw during the Super Bowl, was he did an unbelievable job.
I couldn't agree with you more. It was I thought the coaching was magnificent. Both teams, the execution was really almost flawless. I mean, nobody made mistakes. The play calling, the execution, the offensive football was darn near flawless. It was something to behold.
So I actually had a question for you, because I don't know if you watched the Inside the NFL on Showtime, where they did the mic'd up and they did behind the scenes, and that fourth down call, the trick play they called.
Uh-huh.
It was interesting because it was actually Nick Foles who asked Doug Peterson if they could run it. And to me, that was like unbelievable because of the trust that they had. And I wondered, like, in coaching, how much does that trust with your quarterback matter? And if your quarterback comes up and says, hey, coach, I want to run this play, do you just say, all right, I trust you, let's run this play?
Well, you like that when that happens, you know, when you get a suggestion from a player. And anytime you get it, I mean, you immediately start to compute that suggestion. No, you don't always 100% of the time, every play suggestion by a player, you just automatically call. But you definitely put it into your thought process, and you'd love to call it. And unless you got a real reason why you wouldn't, then you love calling that play, because you know the players have a high trust in getting it executed, and they're heck of a good chance they're going to get it executed. So hope that makes sense. That's the way I think of it. Anyway, I love it when I get a play suggestion. You immediately start thinking about it and computing it. And most of the time you do call it, not 100% of the time though.
This is Jack. A point that I want to make. I coached 46 years, been out of it 46 years now. It's probably 46 and 46. But the beautiful thing about that is that, as you mentioned, the trust that the players have and the freedom that they feel that they, investment that they have in the program where they can make a suggestion and they know it's going to be listened to, it's going to be processed. And in these situations, when it's run, it just encourages that. And I think the bottom level of all team building structures is that trust that coaches and players and members of that team have in each other where they can make those suggestions.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because, I think we all get caught up in, the X's and O's and the talent of the players, and obviously that matters. But when it comes down to it, that human element is really what fascinates me about football and how a guy can have that trust in a coach and vice versa.
Right.
And that's really what takes a team to that championship level where guys are all buying in and they know no matter how the chips are down, no matter what the situation is, they trust in each other, and they trust in the coaching staff to put them in that position.
Yeah, and Eagles obviously had that play game plan. They practiced it. I would assume it was probably a 2-point play. Good possibility that's how they had game planned it and practiced for it. And Nick Foles liked it, and it worked in practice, and he suggested it. Coaches, and as soon as he did, I'm sure that went off in Coach Peterson's head was, hey, great call. Let's run it. And I'm sure that's the way it worked. And they all went out there confidently, and words like trust and et cetera. But I'm sure that's how it got executed.
But back in the day, Paul Brown, remember Paul Brown? And he had a coaching philosophy is run your trick play before they run their trick play. And in that ball game, the Patriots ran their trick play before the Eagles ran theirs, but theirs was about a pass that was thrown about 6 inches too long. And who would have known had that trick play worked, or maybe it triggered the trick play in the player of the Eagles to make that suggestion. So a kind of interesting dynamic in my mind there.
That is interesting. The other question I had was, when a team runs a trick play, is that something as a coach, are you like, okay, this is actually good because clearly their offense can't get it done playing, straight up 11-on-11 here. They gotta start, doing some deep playbook stuff to try to beat our defense. Do you take that as almost a sign of weakness, or do you think every coach has a trick play in their book no matter what?
No, I don't take it as a sign of weakness at all. So I guess to answer your question there, I mean, you want to have a trick play or two every single game, every game that you go into. And you get the right situation to call it, then you pull the trigger. And as Jack says, calling it early is good. Calling it before the other team calls their reverse or their flea flicker. But that mentality of no, it's not weakness to call a trick play.
And most teams in there, they have the first 15 or first 20. Most I think now do the first 15. Bill Walsh came up with that many, many years ago. But most teams or a lot of teams have that trick play in those first 15 off of something that they may have shown a week or two before. The team had a chance to see that formation, had a chance to see that play, and then you devise a little trickery off of that, and you try to get it in those first 15 plays.
So the first 15, explain this to me. I oftentimes see a team, they'll come out and they'll have success. So like the AFC Championship game, the first 15 for the Jaguars looked like it went really well. A lot of times we see Andy Dalton, his first 15, that's really when he started, when he's shining, and then the playbook kind of deteriorates a little bit. As a coach, have you ever thought about doing like a first 45? Like, do you ever think about that? Like, just extend it to the scripted plays for the whole game. That way it gives your quarterback a better chance. Or is that a stupid question?
No, it's actually been done. A first 30, a first 45. I mean, these are our top thoughts. These are what we want to go into the game with, and you script it out as best you can. And even in a first 15, if you get the ball in the red zone, I mean, you're off of that.
Yeah.
That if you get the ball, say you recover it on the 5-yard line, you got to call a different play than what you had called in your first two or three. And mainly think of it like first and second down because third down situations are different than, a third and one is much different than a third and six or a third and 10. You could find yourself backed up inside your own 4-yard line or 2-yard line. So, you're off of your fifth, first 15. But usually you can predict that you're going to get the ball somewhere in between the 20s. And you're able to plan out, you know, what your openers are going to be. You're trying to see what schematic the defense is presenting you to out of different formations, out of one back, out of two back, out of two tight ends or three receivers. You want to get in there where you're hitting them on the perimeter or you're throwing a play action pass. There's multiple things that you want to present a defense early in the game, and that's what you're planning for in a first 15. That's the idea of it, and your players know what they're going to run, you know, early in the game before their emotions have settled down. So those are the reasons for doing it.
Well, and I was talking with Cam Cameron. He said that in a game plan going into a game against Bill Belichick and the Patriots, they had a first 15 in the first half, and they knew that the halftime adjustments would be made by Belichick. So at the beginning of the second half, they had a whole different set of plays called, so they weren't necessarily influenced by the flow of the game, and they were able to kind of attack each half with a separate game plan, which worked out for him, he said.
Dan, this is Jack again. Kind of with your question, here was my thought. And in fact, Jim and I had a during the season, I don't know if he remembers, but we had this conversation. That first 15 just rolls off. Sometimes it's first down, first down, first down, right down the field. And then my thought is, you know, when things get a little sticky maybe in the second quarter, we just reverse that. Instead of going from 1 to 15, we just go from 15 to 1 or start at 7 and go 8 and then come back. Just if those plays are so good and so successful, let's just flip it and just run them all over again. Kind of, I felt you were headed in that direction with your question.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. The other thing, Coach, that interesting thing that happened Super Bowl week, I actually was able to sit down with your former player, Alex Smith, and we talked about, you know, what it's like being benched and being in a big game and trying to buy in. And, you know, he obviously didn't say that he was rooting against the 49ers, but I got him to kind of open up about deep down the competitor in you wants to be the guy. So when you're not the guy, it's a little bit more difficult to buy in. Do you do anything to keep injured players or bench players, you know, buying into to what you guys are doing, knowing that there's probably a small part of them, the competitor in them, that's like, man, I should be the one starting. I should be the one who's out there, like, doing the things that the whole team is doing.
Well, in a quarterback situation, you know, they're always one play away from being in the game. So, yeah, ideally they're preparing like they are the starting quarterback, and they're going in with a mindset that they want the team to be successful. That you're assuming that until I guess you see some sign of otherwise, what that a player that's hurt or benched would take a sabotage type of mindset, and how do you I don't exactly understand your question.
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of pushed him on it, so he never said, like, oh yeah, I was rooting against the 49ers, but just the mentality of a guy who gets benched trying to maybe get something out of them so they can still be a positive influence on the team instead of just letting them mope. And that's not what Alex Smith did. He was still a positive influence. But
yeah, he was. He's always been an incredible teammate and positive influence.
Around here, we're trying to find ways for guys to contribute, whether it's Grant Newsome or Greg Froelich. I mean, we've got guys that are desperately trying to find ways to contribute. So, you know, it's just as much inclusion as possible for the betterment of, you know, the team and their teammates and everything. So I think that's big for us. You had Johnny Manziel on Pardon My Take today. How was that? How'd that interview go for you?
It was good. I mean, I think Johnny, he opened up a lot, and I think he recognizes the mistakes he's made, and he recognizes the things that he did wrong. And, you know, it was actually interesting because I thought of you, Coach, when I asked him this question. I asked him point blank, do you love football? And he kind of explained that, you know, he fell out of love with football for a little bit. And I think that's, you know, you preach it a lot, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Like, if you are going to play at the highest level, whether it be, you know, at Michigan or the NFL,
you have to really be in love with football. Otherwise, all the sacrifices you make, you won't be able to put yourself into those positions, and you won't be able to make the sacrifices for the team. So that was a really interesting thing, him kind of admitting that he fell out of love with football, but he's falling back in love with football, and that's why he's trying to get back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that resonates with what you're saying there is that I think anybody, whether it's high school, college, or pro football, any kind of half-heartedness, if you go into it half-hearted or as you're saying, you know, you don't love the game, it eliminates you. The game eliminates you. And, you know, I think that sounds like the way you're describing this, that, you know, Johnny Manziel learned that firsthand. And now you're saying he's back in love with football. So he's trying to convince people that he loves football. It may take some time. That may take some evidence that he really isn't half-hearted anymore. But I think he's learned a lesson that many have learned, that when you're, you know, lack of earnestness or half-heartedness toward football, you get eliminated from the game. That the game eliminates you. So, mm-hmm. You know, good lesson for all to play the game.
I think a term, and I'm not sure this would to Johnny Manziel, but I think players can, and individuals and stars and Hollywood and all that, you can get distracted. You come into it with a kid-type passion for the game, and you play the game like that, and then there's distractions. It's like a fireworks display going on all around you, and you can get distracted by that. And I don't think you'd fall out of love with football, or you don't have that passion that you had, but your thoughts and as I say, you're distracted to the point where you have to reinvent yourself a little bit and get focused on what you were when you're a 15, 16, 18, 19-year-old guy competing to be the high school quarterback or to be the college quarterback or to take your team somewhere. You kind of lose that, and you need to refocus and get in touch with that.
Yeah, with Johnny Manziel, I mean, you might want to tell the Wally Pipp story. I mean, it's modern. Johnny Manziel's a modern day Wally Pipp. Go ahead and tell that story, Dad.
Well, I'm sure everybody's heard of it. The Lou Gehrig, Wally Pipp, Detroit. They were in Detroit. Wally was an all-star first baseman for the Yankees, and one day he went up to Miller Huggins, the little manager for the Yankees, and told him that he had a little upset stomach that day, and he thought might be a good day to take off. It was a little warm in Detroit. And
what was Wally Pipp doing the night before?
I'm not sure. I don't know exactly. I know he had an upset stomach. It might have had a bad hot dog.
You told me the story that he had a hangover.
I just embellished that. Okay. I added that. I do remember telling you that. It was another message that I was trying to give to you. Might have been a little bit different. But down the bench, Miller went down there. Kid, number four, down there at the end of the bench. Lou Gehrig, come on up here. Jump in there at first baseman. And 1,130 consecutive games, and Wally Pipp. Wally Pipp kind of faded into infamy. But he was a good player now.
He was a very good player. He was a starter for the Yankees.
An all-star, if right. I might add. But I do want to go on record saying I'm not sure about anything that he did before the ball game.
We know what Johnny Manziel did before some
ball games. Well, I'm not going. I choose not to go there.
Let's just say it the way it is.
I'm not going there.
But there's an old saying that the best ability is availability, and that goes for every job and every profession. You know, being available and being ready to be in the action at a moment's notice makes you someone that you can't get rid of.
And being at your absolute best. There's another saying with quarterbacks. I mean, you prepare like you're going to play, that you are prepared, and that if your opportunity does not come, then it's better off than not being prepared and your opportunity does come. So if you're a backup quarterback, you prepare like you are going to be put into the game. You prepare like you're going to be the starter because that opportunity may come. And then if the opportunity doesn't come, then it didn't come. But much better to have gone into the game that way than to have not prepared yourself. Then all of a sudden the opportunity comes and then you don't perform. So
it's like Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, he was a second-year guy and down the roster, and Bledsoe was a was he an all-star? And he gets injured, and Tom Brady in the game, and now you know the rest of the story.
Yeah. So for
and Nick Foles.
Here we go.
Of course.
Definitely the mentality should be, I mean, maybe you think you should be the starter. Maybe you think you should be playing. But that should never affect how you prepare yourself because that opportunity may come a la a Nick Foles, a la
Tom Brady. How many people thought when Carson went down with a knee injury in L.A. in like week 14 that Nick Foles would be the Super Bowl MVP? Yeah. I mean, that tells you everything right there.
So I think we're getting it. We're getting to the moral of the story here is you always got to be prepared, whether you're the starter or you're the backup. You don't Wally Pippet the night before a game. You don't Johnny.
Again, I want to go on record.
You don't Johnny Manziel it the night before a game. I mean, you get yourself ready to play in that game, whether you're the starter or the backup. If you're the backup, you go into it like a Nick Foles. You go into it like a Tom Brady. If you're the starter, then by gosh, you know your opportunity is there, and you get yourself prepared for it. Another great quote that pops into my mind right now is: say you are the starter, approach it like Satchel Paige. Yeah. You know, never look back. Somebody might be gaining on you. You know, you. Mm-hmm. You get yourself ready to play the best you possibly can.
That's a great regret in my career as an athlete. My whole first year, I didn't invest in trying to be the starter because there was a guy in front of me who was world-class, outstanding. And, Coach, you told me, you said, what do you weigh right now? I said, 170 pounds. You said, I want you to be 200 pounds by the beginning of next season. I said, 200 pounds? How am I going to gain 30 pounds? You said, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'll try. He said, take the try out of it. Just do it. And so I didn't. And then lo and behold, a week before I'm ready to start my redshirt sophomore year, so my second season, the starter falls down a hill, fractures his skull, and then here I am, 170 pounds, not ready to play, splitting time at the beginning of the season, and had I had prepared like I was going to be the starter, I'd have been in much better condition and in much better shape to be the permanent fixture at running back. So, great regret.
Mm-hmm.
So there it is. Whether you're the backup or the starter, I mean, You got to go in fully prepared. And if you go in half-hearted, you know, whether you're the starter or whether you're the backup, you know, bad things are going to happen.
Big Cat.
And you have a chance to be eliminated from football.
It came full circle there. Big Cat, what are the chances we'll get you through here for Grit Week and for the Wisconsin game October 13th and any other dates? What does your Ann Arbor travel itinerary look like?
So Grit Week this year, we may be going south because we've kind of neglected the southern part of the country. So we're trying to we might be doing that, but that can always change. But I am absolutely in for the Badgers going to Ann Arbor. I was in Ann Arbor last time the Badgers played Michigan. Well, I think it was 2009 or 2010, and I think there was the Michigan Wolverines won. Because Rich Rod threw a flag out of his back pocket in a key moment. So that game is still under protest. But I definitely will make the trip back for Wisconsin-Michigan this year. Absolutely.
I guess, and one final thing, we didn't manage to get the Football Guy of the Year trophy for Coach. I don't know. Did that get lost in the mail or what?
I still owe it. It's very unfootball guy of us to never make the trophy of an award we created, but it's coming. I can guarantee that. We need to deliver it in person. So that's really what it comes down to. We gotta make a trip, a special trip to Ann Arbor sometime in the spring and present the trophy and do it the proper way, because who wants a trophy just showing up in the mail? That really kind of takes the lust out of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think we would accept the trophy in person.
I didn't earn any trophies. Personally,
You did.
No,
Football I didn't. Guy of the Year. You absolutely did.
Trying to refuse the Football Guy of the Year distinction. That's a little bit of a standoff. Well, good luck. Good luck with filming the Barstool video up there in the Catskills. You and Mike Tyson have something in common, reigning from that area, huh?
Yes, exactly. It's going to be something else. It's Winter Olympics time, so I appreciate you guys having me on, though. Let's do it again sometime soon.
Awesome. Appreciate you, Big Cat.
Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Big Cat.
Thanks, guys.
Bye now.
Before we get to Jack Talk, we want to talk about a true and loyal supporter of the program. That, of course, is True Car. Again, back to the useful car tips that you're not aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve your gas mileage. And then we talked about the key fob to the chin or facial parts to help extend the range. That is very awkward and quirky, but a true fact. Here's another tip you might also not know. True Car helps people get used cars, not just new cars. That's right. True Car isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and their nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you will enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler car buying experience, whether you buy new or used. So with True Car, you can see what other people have paid for the vehicles that you are looking for in your area, so you know you're getting a good deal before you buy. Also, you're more likely to enjoy a faster car buying experience by connecting with True Car certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states, but you can get outstanding deals, I assume, in Alaska, Hawaii, Vermont, North Carolina, Washington, Michigan, Carolina. I already said Carolina. But South Carolina, I don't know. All 50 states. True Car for your next used or new car. We appreciate Big Cat for coming on, helping us out, giving a great interview and asking more questions than we were able to ask him. So that was doesn't always happen that way. But now it is time for the best segment each and every show. Hashtag Jack Talk. Oh, Jack.
No.
But you had said you wanted to talk a little bit about just being out on the sand lot. Just the friendships and the relationships that you develop kind of growing up together, and let you expand on that.
My all-time great movie. I mean, we've had all-time great movies. Mine is Sandlot, a movie that came out in 1993. And I can't remember exactly when I saw it. When I saw that movie, I thought to myself, this is the way I grew up. This was my childhood. And you remember some of those guys, Scotty Smalls in that movie and Benny the Jet Rodriguez. You remember him?
Yeah.
And then there was a gal named Wendy Peppercorn.
Yeah.
I remember that part of the movie. But we had a sand lot, one door from us. We had a sand lot, much like that. And in the summertime when we were real young, we'd meet there. We had about 8 or 9, 10 guys that would come, and we'd play Pepper, the old Pepper, and we made our bases and wrapped up the balls and tacked the bats when they were broken, all wooden bats in those days, and just go out and play. Just play for hours and hours. And in our sand lot, they had a Benny the Jet Rodriguez. We had a Gates Brown, who played in the major leagues for 13 years. They had a Scotty Smalls that moved into town and became a radio broadcaster for the Los Angeles Dodgers, if you remember. Scotty Smalls. We had a Scotty Smalls, two Scotty Smalls in our playground. We had a guy by the name of Dave Smith, who was the sports editor for the Dallas Morning News. He's the guy that came up with the aggregate, the little page on the back of a sports page. If you go from the back and turn it over, it's a page that's got everything on it. You know, all the batting averages and the schedules and all. Dave Smith is the guy that put that together. He was on our playground. Mike Gottfried went to work with Ron Franklin and ESPN on the college football game of the week. He was a football coach and then got into that business. So we had two Scotty Smalls in our playground. And a great story, 2002, Western Kentucky University, we're playing McNeese State for the national championship in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was a Friday night game. It was a 6 o'clock start. The only game on television that Friday night, it was the national championship game, 1AA national championship. And sure enough, just as in Sandlot, I'm coaching the Western Kentucky University team, and Mike Gottfried is doing the color for ESPN. He's doing the game. So on Thursday night before the game, he has a radio show that's across the country, and he asked if I would come on the radio and we could talk a little bit about the game. It would be good for promoting the game, and certainly agreed to do it. So we're at there. We're having a snack and getting ready for the show, and Mike says, Jack, I really believe that when we do this radio show, it would be good if our listening audience didn't realize that we're cousins, that we're first cousins. And my mom and your mom were sisters. We were raised a 5 doors from each other. The played sandlot ball there. And he said, I think it'd be good if they didn't know that. And I said, well, Mike, that's fine. You do the interview and I'll pick it up. But I'll keep in mind that from 1987 to 1988, Mike Gottfried was the head football coach at the University of Pittsburgh, and I was on his staff as the assistant head coach. So we had offices that were adjacent to each other, saw each other every day for 2 years. So we get on the show, and Mike takes the microphone. He goes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. And guest tonight is Jack Harbaugh, the head football coach at Western Kentucky University and playing in the national championship game tomorrow night against McNeese State. Jack, I don't think we ever met before, have we? And I look at him, I think, what? What did you just say? Well, Mike, I guess if you don't consider the 2 years that I worked for you as the assistant head football coach at the University of Pittsburgh, I guess this may be the first time that we've met. So when Mike says this, the hell with it. We're first cousins. Our mom were sisters. So that blew that. And we went on to have a great interview. And then for him to broadcast the game with Ron Franklin the next night was a tremendous thrill. But Sandlot, remember, Scotty Smalls, Benny the Jet Rodriguez, Dodger Stadium. Scotty Smalls has his fish hat on, got a microphone, and Benny is leading off at third base. He's going to try to steal home. Here comes Benny. Slides home, safe, and they win the game. And Benny the Jet walking off the field, and he looks up to the press box, and he gives Scotty Smalls a thumb up, and this bond of playing on that sand lot. I have no story like that. I have no story like that, but brought back some great memories.
Well, you went on to describe all of the other people who were a part of your Sandlot unit. I think it might be glossing over the fact that you yourself are a national championship head coach. So you're a component of that very integral success. And
if I might add,
yes,
very appropriate that you would bring. I'm so thankful.
Just didn't want to discount that. I know you don't like shameless self-promotion.
I do. I really do, but I don't like to be the one to give it. I so much appreciate you adding that caveat.
I just want to say, Jack, it's not bragging if you've done it.
Well, thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Well, I can just tell you, I'm looking forward to Valentine's Day with the Harbaughs. You'll have a card. Jack, you'll have a card. Of course, the love of my life, Mara Koplitz, will have a card. There'll be plenty of Valentine's Day cards to go around.
Now, does that mean just like in those old days that we need to go out and get Valentine's for our guests as well? Or,
you know, our ability to be at your house is a gift enough.
Oh, my goodness.
How about that?
Oh, my goodness.
You like that? Oh, my goodness.
Overwhelmed.
Well, we're excited about it. It'll be a great Valentine's Day celebration with the Harbaughs. Who's got it better than Mara and I? Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody. So we want to thank everybody for listening in. Brandon Graham, by the way, has committed to being on the show. We're just not sure when. So
I imagine he's got a lot of commitments and engagements that he's wading through.
Yeah, I'd like to think that we're near the top of the list, but I understand that he also has a life going on and, you know, might not fit into our schedule, or we might not fit into his, but we'll get there. I was thinking, Coach Harbaugh coached Randy Moss, so it might be nice to get him on. So we've got some guests in the hopper. But again, please rate us and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can listen to the show on the Podcast One app via Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com. I'd like to thank Podcast One, True Car, a new sponsor, Hymns. Of the show, and not HYMNS. No, it's HIMS. I don't know if you were directing like a hymn. Okay. HIMS, like plural males. Anyhow, tweet your questions or interviewee suggestions or anything you've got to at AED Podcast or at JTE Rogan. We appreciate you guys tweeting in and your appreciation for hashtag Jackie Talk and Jack Talk and everything. We look forward to doing this each and every week. So until then, keep on listening and keep attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger. I used to host the Art of Charm podcast, but now it's time for something new. The Jordan Harbinger Show. Did you know you can be entertained and actually get a boost in your life at the same time? On this show, we dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers and top talents. Then we deliver them to you right into your ears. But I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint so you can live what you listen. After 1,000 interviews, learning 5 languages, and getting arrested in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, I'm now more ready than ever to introduce you to The Jordan Harbinger Show. Listen free to The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app.